Welcome to the Special Sauce Podcast, real conversations about food and life, hosted by Serious Eats founder, Ed Levine.
The night that I was the most sick, I'm not exaggerating, I thought I was going to die that night. I had never felt as bad as I did. It felt like it went on for a long time, but it was probably only like 15, 20 minutes.
On this episode of Special Sauce, we talk to Washington Post food writer Tim Carman and his Spirits writer spouse Carrie Allen about their scary battle with the coronavirus, and Kenji offers up a simple soup recipe to comfort them. ...2021 is upon us, and the pandemic continues to wreak psychological and economic havoc on restaurants and the millions of people who depend on those restaurants for their livelihood. But one of the things I've been curious about is what happens to people in the food culture who actually contract the virus. I wanted to hear their stories. Washington Post food writer Tim Carman and his Spirits writer wife, Carrie, who is a wonderful spirits journalist, both came down with the virus. So welcome to Special Sauce, both of you, Tim and Carrie.
Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
I do have to say I wish it were under different circumstances.
Don't we all? Like the entire universe.
Yeah.
Before we get into the COVID saga, I guess I'd like to hear just a few words about each of your jobs before the pandemic and before you came down with the virus. Like, what kinds of stories were you doing? Tim, you are on staff at the Washington Post. Carrie, you are a freelancer who writes for the Washington Post and many other publications. But just tell people what your lives were like.
So I cover cocktails and spirits, and mostly with the focus for those making drinks at home. So I bounce all over the place between, you know, what's good to buy in terms of new products, to how to make a great cocktail in your home environment, to talking to local bartenders about what's going on. But this is kind of a side gig for me because I have a pretty busy job at a national nonprofit that takes up most of my life.
So this is like a part-time gig for you.
Yeah, it's a part-time thing for me. My day job is as a vice president with the Humane Society of the United States.
Wow.
I like to joke that my day job causes my night job and that I drink because of my day job.
Tim, you obviously married up.
You know it, Ed. You're only like the 1,000th person to tell me that.
I feel like I married up.
By the way, 10,000 people have told me about my wife, so it's okay. So, Tim, what about you?
So, pre-COVID, I am a national food reporter. So, I write about trends that we spot in the American food environment. I do profiles. I do an occasional investigation. I also write a weekly column dedicated to local restaurants, small mom-and-pop places, kind of an emphasis on immigrant cuisines. And of course, you know, after COVID hit, that changed. I mean, I still did the column, although all takeout. But then I started writing about the pandemic and how it's affecting people in the industry. Everything from how restaurateurs are frustrated with their insurance companies for not paying out for what they consider like catastrophic damages, to workers that are worried about working in this environment, even though they have to, because they may not have the safety net, the social safety nets needed to survive without it.
So how did it feel, being that that was your beat, when you came down with the virus? That must have been, it was like, wait, this is what I'm supposed to report on, not what I'm supposed to get.
I wish I were that articulate once I got it. I had so many fears going through my head at that moment. I mean, I went to bed Tuesday night, November 10th, and I had a cough and I took some medicine, woke up, and I just felt awful, as bad as I had ever felt. And I didn't really get up, but I talked to my doctor and she's like, okay, go get a test and then we'll figure out what to do. She sent us to this place that was supposed to do a quick response test within like an hour or so. they couldn't take me. So we had to go to an emergency room, which was a lot of fun. And that was a 2 to 3 day turnaround.
Wow.
So I didn't walk out knowing whether I had COVID or not until like 2 days later, but I had all the symptoms and I felt awful. So I pretty much suspected that I had COVID.
Now, you wrote this great paragraph that I'd love you to read. And if you don't have it in front of you, I will read it.
I have it right here. The cough began in earnest on November 10th, a Tuesday. It was a dry hack and it got worse as the day progressed. I went to bed early and woke up the next morning feeling as if I had been hit by a truck and left for dead by the side of the road. My fever was nearly 103 degrees and I didn't want to move.
Whoa, man. When I read that, I was like, that sounds truly awful. And Carrie, what did you make of it? Because you have both a day job and a night job that takes you out and about. And now you've got Tim rolling around on the floor like he's a marble.
Yeah. It was really interesting. You know, I was actually just, I heard today this really interesting thing that talked about the fact that it's not clear that just because you show symptoms first, that you're the person who actually brought it into the house, right? Because Tim definitely got sicker before I did. And he got sicker, period, than I did. So I was really concerned about him. Meanwhile, I had what seemed to be just sort of like a really bad cold. But when Tim says he has all the symptoms, I mean, he had all the symptoms that people think of, I think, as typical of COVID, but also like, this is such a weird disease, right? I mean, I think up until this point, at least I had been thinking of COVID as primarily respiratory. And I think for both of us, and honey, stop me if I'm wrong here, but the symptoms that affected each of us most were less respiratory, although we were monitoring our air levels and things like that. But I had like just this sort of crushing headache and a brain fog that wouldn't leave for a couple of weeks. And then Tim had this feeling of internal discombobulation that I think isn't typically what people think of with COVID. You know, we were both worried about it, but Tim was so sick that night. I mean, and that was the night I had my phone in hand ready to call 911 because I was like, we might be at the point where that has to happen.
You were terrified.
That was before he was officially diagnosed, although we were pretty confident that he probably had this. But, you know, given that you're not sure, the last thing you want to do is take him to the emergency room where he might get exposed to something he doesn't have yet.
Right. That's one of the strange things about COVID is there are so many asymmetrical aspects of the virus in terms of symptoms and when they show. It doesn't sound like you are having a very good health time even before Tim, right?
Well, I think that I was maybe 2 days behind him in terms of symptoms.
Got it.
I never got as sick as he did, but even when we were both starting to feel a little crappy, he was ahead of the curve, as he always is for me. Like, he's always a little ahead of me. And so 2 days later, you know.
For the record, this is not true.
When he got tested, we kind of debated when we were at the emergency room, like, I should go ahead and get tested. No, I shouldn't. And I know, like, and I think both of us were a little bit eager to get out of the emergency room. And so I decided not to. But part of the reason for me deciding not to is because honestly, I figured if he's got it, I've got it. I mean, we hadn't been social distancing from each other. We live together. We sleep in the same bed. The dogs are kissing us. The dogs are kissing each other. The dogs are transferring everything around. And so I was just like, if he's got it, I've got it. Why bother? And the only reason I ended up going back and getting it confirmed is because I felt like it was the responsible thing to do from a sort of public health perspective.
Yeah. And what's interesting is when I was thinking about talking to the two of you, I realized you don't read much about spousal transmission and the nature of it. Like, I don't know that there's data, or maybe it's that I just haven't seen the data, because it's still a huge question mark for me.
Yeah, and I'll give you like anecdotal data. So back in April, my dad had it. And my dad, who is, you know, in his mid-70s, lives with my mom still. My mom has a lot of comorbidities, and so we've been very concerned about both of them. My dad had it, didn't know for sure it was what he had, but seemed like pretty confident. He said he's never been more tired in his life. And for 2 weeks, he was pretty much locked on the couch. My mom never got it. So he didn't find out for sure until months later. He's got the antibodies. Definitely had it. He's had them rechecked. He still has the antibodies. My mom has tested negative 3 times and they never distance from each other.
That's it. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It's bizarre.
There's no rhyme or reason to it. So I'd like each of you, and we could start with Tim. How careful were you going in terms of, there were people, of course, in the beginning who were washing every package that came in through the door. And I remember Kenji wrote this great piece about COVID food safety that sort of went viral on Serious Eats because he did an incredible amount of homework.
Kenji? Really?
And he separated the myths from the reality. But Tim, you were hitting up Cambodian joints in Alexandria one day and then a Thai place in Leesburg or whatever. It's like, what was your level of caution?
I would say that my level of caution was pretty high. And part of that is because I did a lot of that reporting too, and of course, been reading about it. And, you know, I knew that it's very unlikely to get COVID through food because it doesn't go into your respiratory system, goes through your digestive system, completely different. And there was no evidence that any sort of COVID disease would happen through the digestive tract. So I knew I was fairly safe on the food front. You know, I had bought some masks for Carrie and I, and early in the pandemic, Carrie and I ate out a couple of times. One was indoors and one was outdoors. And that was really basically the only time we ate out or ate inside. Otherwise, I did takeout, I would say 99.9% of the time. And what I mean by takeout is that I would order ahead, go pick it up, immediately eat it in the car. I felt like I was taking a lot of precautions. But I mean, the thing is, and I'm sure you've read about this too, it's like, just because you wear a mask and keep socially distant, it doesn't mean that you are safe from the virus. It just decreases your chances of getting the virus. And one of the things that I've really learned in the last few weeks is, you can get the virus in any indoor space in a very quick amount of time, depending on, you know, how many people go in and out of that space, how well ventilated it is, because the virus is airborne. It's not just transmitted through droplets. It stays in the air, and it's thought to stay in the air for a few hours, in fact. And the more people that go into a space, the more the aerosols build up in the space. So, you know, if I went to CVS or Walgreens or someplace like that, or Whole Foods, I pulled my mask down to itch my nose or something, I could have got it then. I mean, I just think we know so much more about how this virus goes from person to person than we did in March. And it's much more dangerous than any of us ever really thought.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. You got really sick. Did you get really worried? And Carrie, you got pretty sick right afterwards, a couple of days behind. So you had two pretty sick people in the household and with some pretty scary symptoms, right? From your story that you wrote, Tim, it's like you couldn't help but be worried.
I was really worried the night that I was the most sick. I'm not exaggerating. I thought I was going to die that night. I had never felt as bad as I did. I don't really know how long it lasted. Carrie probably have a better sense because I was in the middle of it. It felt like it went on for a long time, but it was probably only like 15, 20 minutes or something. But after that passed, for the next few days, I felt like I was getting better. And I was talking to my friend who's a scientist and does a lot with virus research. And he was like, be prepared for a second wave. And he was right. And that the second wave was really when I was having more of the respiratory problems. And that was a different sort of a fear. It wasn't like this immediate fear that you could die from a heart attack on your floor from a huge viral load. It was this idea that if my blood oxygen levels go down really low, I may have to go to the hospital. And I really didn't want to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Carrie bought an oximeter online, and I would take my blood oxygen level, I would say, 5 times a day. And I just started to really dread it.
Yeah.
Because I was just waiting for it to get so low that I'd have to turn to Carrie and say, I need to go to the hospital. There were times where I could not stand up for longer than 2 minutes at a time.
And Carrie, you shortly thereafter got pretty sick, but maybe not quite as sick as Tim, but I assume you were really, really worried for both of you.
Yeah, I was probably more worried for Tim. just because he was substantially sicker than me. And for me, it basically was like the worst cold I've ever had. I don't say that to really downplay it, because a cold can really be debilitating. And that's really kind of how I felt, is like, I was still trying to work and, you know, I'd be in meetings, you know, I'm on Zoom calls basically all day from my day job. And I just sort of, there'd be some of them when I just sort of find myself sort of staring vegetatively into the camera. And, you know, like I kept trying to work through it. I was like, why can't I focus? Why can't I think? You know, like my memory was shot and all this sort of stuff. But by comparison with what Tim had that one night when it was most acute, mine felt like something that was really a bummer, but that it seemed like it would probably pass.
Right.
Tim's one really, really bad night was terrifying.
For Carrie, I think the hard part was that she still had to work. You know, she's at a level at which, for an organization, that she can't really take that time off. And that was my biggest concern, was that I could lie on the couch and moan like a baby and be fine and watch endless parades of movies. But Carrie had to actually be in her office and be on. And I can't imagine being able to do that.
I do want to say that that was partially just me. I mean, I had my boss and my colleagues telling me to please go and take a nap and stop drooling on Zoom calls with them. It was not like that anybody at my job was like, stay on the phone, you deathly ill person. But once I got past the brain fog, which I guess for me took maybe like the worst brain fog lasted for probably about a week, when I really felt like, man, I am not functioning. You know, like I would have these meetings with my staff and I would forget things that I had told them or they had told me literally 3 minutes earlier. It was bad.
That's crazy.
We haven't been working in the office since March. Around the 10th of March, we all got the message from our editors saying that we were going to be out for the rest of the month, which is kind of comical now. I mean, we even knew then that it was strange to think that somehow this virus is going to disappear on April 1st, but we didn't expect it to go on this long. But we've been out of the office since early March, so there's been no interaction. I have no interactions with my colleagues, like just about everybody else that's not in a service industry.
Sure.
So there's no contagion between my coworkers. But from a management perspective, they were so supportive. I mean, my editor and the editors above him, the message was loud and clear, do not work until you're ready.
Wow.
They were clear about this. They said, we want you just to rest, take as much time as you need. And, you know, after about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks, I went back to work. And that very same day, I got a Slack message from the head of the features department. Her message was like one line, why are you working?
Wow.
So I felt very supportive. And they also just sent us ungodly amounts of food.
And poor Tim had no appetite whatsoever. Like, I never lost my appetite. I was like scarfing down food. But poor Tim, they were sending us all this really good food, and like a couple of like local places sent us things. It was so kind. And poor Tim, I feel like you lost like 15 pounds during this thing, hon.
Wow. But neither of you lost your sense of taste or smell, right?
Thank God, no.
We did not.
Listening to Special Sauce. I'm Ed Levine. Let's continue our conversation with the Washington Post's Tim Carman and his Spirits writer wife, Carrie Allen.
One thing that I thought about was the fact that I got to lie on the couch for 2 weeks and do nothing. And there are people like Carrie's sister is a nurse, and she works in an emergency room up in Baltimore. And when they get sick, I'm not saying Molly has to be this way specifically, but a lot of emergency room nurses and nurses in general, after 10 days, they get called back to work. And like, I could not even begin to understand that. It's like at day 10, there was no way I was getting off the couch, let alone going in to help somebody.
Wow.
That was such a luxury to have. And I knew it was a luxury, because there are just people that they don't even have sick leave, although, you know, the government mandated it in the CARES Act. So there was, you were required if you got sick with COVID to give people time off. So that was great. That was one solid benefit, but that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're undocumented, particularly in the restaurant industry, as you fully well know, Ed, it's like there's a good percentage of undocumented workers. They got nothing. They got none of the sick leave. They got none of the unemployment. And they had to either go to work and risk their lives to feed themselves and others, or try to make hand-to-mouth living for all these months.
Yeah.
Not only has this whole pandemic just been absolute hell for bars and the people who work in them, but I actually was thinking about this more in terms of my day job, because I have the good fortune to work for a nonprofit where, for the most part, you know, we have some actual centers that provide direct care for animals. And, you know, we have some people who are out doing actual hands-on rescue work, but a lot of us are in offices. And so we've been able to work from home. But one of the things that came up during the course of this was we do a lot of work trying to sort of reform practices in factory farming. And there was that story about a particular company that shall remain unnamed because I don't want you to get sued, but the execs at the meat plant were actually taking bets on how many line workers were going to get COVID.
Yeah, that was one of the creepiest things ever.
That was just incredible. Yeah.
Carrie, how did the experience change you?
I already felt just a tremendous sense of gratitude before we got sick and managed to recover. It's a good question about how it changed me. I mean, it's hard to say just because I've been so worried about my elderly parents this whole time. I've worried because my sister is an ICU nurse. And I mean, I actually just texted Tim earlier today because as of tomorrow, my sister's getting vaccinated. And I was just like, this is the best thing that has happened, you know, the entirety of 2020. But it made me feel just incredibly fortunate, not only just to be able to work at home, recover from this thing at reasonable leisure, have a safe place to go to recover, have the support of family and colleagues. But Tim was particularly ill, and he was ill to a point where it was potentially very serious. And just the notion of what people who don't have our privileges and resources are going through on this front was really just pretty clear to me.
Yeah. What about you, Tim? How did the experience change you?
That's a hard question. I mean, I tend to think that we change in sort of incremental, small ways and not large shifts of the ground. I mean, one thing that really struck me was how much support both Carrie and I had from our friends and family and colleagues. And I was really moved by it. And I think it's so easy, at least for me, to go through day-to-day life. And, you know, you're hitting one deadline, another deadline. You know, I'm just getting through my work life. And I think it's easy to forget how much people care. And this was like a two-week stretch where food showed up on the doorstep, where I got text messages, I got Slack messages, I got emails, and they were all worried. And people showed so much love and support at I was just really reminded of the community of friends that we have. And I was just so grateful for it. I was just thinking, like, once we get past this, I just want to make sure that we can spend as much time, quality time as we can together.
Yeah. Did the experience of having the virus change the way you go about doing your job, Tim?
I don't know. I don't think it necessarily has. I mean, you know, my job is basically, you know, reporting, getting the facts as best as I can under a deadline, getting multiple sides. I still do all that. You know, I think if anything, I just want to hear people's stories maybe a little bit more. We all have limitations to how long we can report on a story. There's always some editor drumming his or her fingers waiting for your copy. But I really just want to hear what they've been going through. If I talk to somebody that has gone through it or has a family member that's gone through it. It's like I had a very intimate case of it, and I know what it's like.
Yeah.
Although Carrie's case was different than mine. Some people barely feel anything. They're asymptomatic. I mean, obviously, thousands of people have died, which is just terrible. But just to hear what their stories are like, I like to hear it, whether it's for print or not.
What about you, Carrie?
You know, my particular focus as a cocktail writer is a little different specifically because I'm writing mostly for people who are making drinks at home. I think for me, mostly the way it's changed things is I feel particularly awful calling people in the bar world to ask them trivial things about their drink making. The last thing I want to do is especially with the folks that I don't necessarily know whether they're, you know, are they still at their gig? Are they halfway shut down? Are they partially shut down? Are they working? Are they okay? You know, do I want to call a source and ask them, you know, how to make a good Manhattan when they may be dealing with unemployment and family illness and illness themselves and illness of colleagues? For me, it's just sort of increased a little bit of my fear around some of this stuff, is just because the last thing I want to do is, I know that people have this kind of, you know, love-hate relationship with the press already. And I already feel a little bit parasitic at times with the job. And so at this particular time when the industries that we cover are going through so much, that my sense of that has just kind of like, it's been dialed up to 11.
For sure. And did it make either of you feel more mortal or less immortal?
I've always felt pretty mortal. I mean, like, you know, I feel like we were lucky we got through it. Quite frankly, I think we've been incredibly fortunate. It was interesting because the thing that for a while I was a little bit obsessive about is how we got it, because I think we were pretty careful. And that's one of the things that I think has been difficult for me to wrestle with a bit, because it's like our country right now is really divided on some very basic public health measures that shouldn't be so divisive. And one of the things that I think is interesting in my mind is that we were following 95% of those smart public health measures, and yet we still got it. And so this is by no means me saying like those public health measures are not worthwhile, because I think they are critical. But at the same time, I also think, hey, we were doing almost everything right. Like, I've gone over in my head, like, how could we have gotten this? And they're like particular things. I'm like, could have come in on a takeout bag, could have been just at the grocery store. I mean, I definitely have had moments at the grocery store when I've been just sort of, you get into an aisle where you feel like you're being boxed in by people and they're not social distancing and you can't get around their carts, and you're suddenly aware of your own and others' personal space in a way that I don't think I ever was before. You know, like, I look forward to a day when I don't regard fellow humans with fear, because I've never been that kind of person. Like, I've never had a strong sort of like, oh, get out of my personal space sort of feeling until now. And now I feel like it's going to be a long time before I kind of recover from that and get back to a sense of normalcy, that it's okay that someone who I don't really know that well in a public space is relatively close to me.
And what about you, Tim? When you were lying on the floor, that must have been truly terrifying, and you thought you were dying. So obviously your mortality came up.
Yeah. I think there's multiple levels of feeling like you can touch and taste your own mortality. I've known I'm mortal probably from the day I was taken off the football field in high school on a stretcher. That will quickly disabuse you of the notion that you are an Iron Man. Your body is fragile and it breaks and it hurts. But when I was on the floor and thinking, I mean, very acutely thinking that I could die, there are all thoughts that go through your head.
Yeah.
And most of them are not good.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a fantasy scenario. It's kind of a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, like I'm thinking I need to get to the hospital, but I can't move. And Carrie's not going to be able to move me. And I'm in such pain that if Carrie has to call the ambulance, will I survive till they get here? And then, because I'm such a Midwestern, I'm like, what will the neighbors think if they see an ambulance?
I would have figured out a way to move you, honey. I would have dragged you by an ankle, like Beavis and Butthead. Yeah, you would have gotten out of the house.
Is there any advice that you would like to impart at this moment to your fellow serious eaters and drinkers as we continue to go through this? Yes, there's a vaccine, but we're not even through the worst. Is there anything that you've said to friends as a result of your having this thing?
I think there's a few things, and serious eaters probably know this already. In cities like New York and DC, you can't even do it anyway, but I would really refrain from eating indoors. And I say that even though I love restaurants, I know how much it hurts. There's some people that I think still dispute the data, but from what I've seen, it seems very solid that if you spend 2 hours indoors where you're going to be taking your mask off repeatedly with people coming in and out from all different areas of the city and maybe even outside the city, that you are taking some serious risks.
Yeah.
And dinner is not worth it.
Yeah. What about you, Carrie?
I hate to draw on somebody else's great thoughts, but I think I'm going to go back to Warren Zevon and just say, enjoy every sandwich, because, you know, that sandwich might not be there tomorrow.
So finally, how are you guys feeling now? Have you had any long hauler symptoms?
Yeah, I would say that we have a little bit of that. For me, it's starting to ease a bit more, but for a solid, you know, like the first 2 weeks were most acute, but for a solid month, we were having pretty bad symptoms. I mean, like for the first 2 weeks, we were really sick. And then the 2 weeks following, we were just exhausted, absolutely exhausted. And I think we've still got a little bit of lingering exhaustion. I, for the past couple weeks, and it's getting better every day, knock on wood. But, you know, I've had this headache. That's the headache that I had during the worst of COVID that for a while was once every other day. And now it's once every 3 days. And it's a little bit less bad every time. So I'm hoping that that's a good trend. But there's definitely some stuff left over, I feel like.
I think that's right. I mean, I know that I've been tired more than usual. There's been some body aches, which I think Carrie's had too. And it may be post-COVID, it may be long haulers syndrome, but I also have allergies and the allergies go into the winter. So sometimes if I just take an Allegra, I start to feel better. So it's really hard for me to know like where the long haul COVID ends and allergies begin. This might go under sort of the advice to others, but I've been really trying to focus on eating better, taking care of my immune system, trying to boost that for the last 2 months. You know, as part of my job, I eat a lot of fatty foods.
I'm familiar.
High calorie foods. Yeah, of course. And, you know, they're delicious and I could eat it every day, multiple times a day, but it maybe is not the best for my immune system that could use some more green leafy things and fruits and fiber and things like that. So, you know, I've been trying to eat more fruits on my off hours, boost my immune system with some multivitamins. I'm not sure they actually work, but why not take a chance on it? You know, trying to get a little more exercise, that's been important. But I mean, that's the great dichotomy of this. It's like you're tired and one thing that would help is to exercise, but you're too tired to exercise.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to just work on building up my immune system. So if, God forbid, I have another bout, which is a possibility, that I handle it better this time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that one of the ironies for me is that the whole beginning of this, I was like, I'm going to be really healthy and like mentally healthy and physically healthy. So I'm going to go for a walk every day. And part of the thing that that resulted in is that I was going for these long walks in the woods near our house and got bitten by two ticks and then got two positive Lyme tests.
That'll teach you to walk.
I was like, this is not what was planned. And the problem now is that there are so many symptoms between Lyme disease and COVID that are really similar. The muscle aches, the fatigue, the whole thing. And so now I'm not sure whether anything that I'm having is like, do I still have Lyme? Do I have COVID? What do I have? Like, is it just 2020? Everybody's got this stuff.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, thank you so much, Tim Carman, Carrie Allen, for sharing your pretty harrowing COVID experiences. I think there's a lot we can learn from what you've been saying. And please stay safe and healthy as this horrible pandemic hopefully starts to come to a close. I mean, that's all we can all wish for, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now it's time for Ask Kenji, where we get to ask the best-selling author of The Food Lab and Every Night is Pizza Night, Kenji Lopez-Ault, any food-related question a serious eater would like answered. This time around, since Tim Carman said he was trying to eat more leafy greens as he recovers from the coronavirus, I asked Kenji for a simple leafy greens recipe that would offer comfort to Tim and Carrie.
I've been working on this wok cookbook and doing the photo sessions for them, which means that I've been cooking, you know, like 10 dishes a day. And so I have a lot of leftovers and I have a lot of random stuff in my fridge. And one of the things I was doing for the book was a congee, you know, like a rice porridge with lettuce, which is quite a common thing in China, is to have wilted lettuce. But I had this half head of romaine left over and Audrey wanted soup. And so we made this lettuce and ginger soup, which I thought was super delicious, and it takes like 5 minutes to make, super healthy, very easy. So we basically took chicken stock. I had some homemade chicken stock, but I've also done this before with just store-bought stock. But you take any kind of chicken stock, throw it in a saucepan, bring it up to a simmer with a few slices of ginger, and maybe a couple of very roughly chopped scallions. You bring it up to a simmer. You can take out the ginger and scallions, you know, after they infuse for a few minutes, or you can just leave them in. I usually just leave them in. And then in this particular soup, what we did was we added some, I had some leftover rice. We also had some rotisserie chicken, like straight from the supermarket, just rotisserie chicken. So I shredded up some chicken meat and some rice, simmered it in there, and then roughly chop up the lettuce, like a lot of lettuce, and throw it in there and let it simmer just for like 2 minutes. You know, in about 10 to 15 minutes, you have this very delicious bowl of soup that's very easy to make. And to me, we don't eat enough wilted greens in the U.S. Like, you know, people think of lettuce and they think, oh, that has to be cold and crunchy in a salad. But even like France, lettuce soups are not a completely unheard of thing. It just seems like something that we sort of don't do much in this country. But when, you know, especially in the winter, like a lettuce soup, it absorbs flavors really well. It retains a little bit of crunch, but it gets that sort of nice, I don't know what you'd call it. It's sort of like when you cook down cabbage a little bit, where it retains crunch, but it's also nice and tender. And lettuce will get to that texture in like 2 to 3 minutes in hot broth.
Even iceberg?
Absolutely. Iceberg even works. This has happened to me before, and it's probably happened to Tim because I'm sure he makes burgers at home. But I've bought like a head of iceberg because I want shredded iceberg on a hamburger. And it's like, all right, so we just made 4 burgers or like 3 burgers for the family. I used up a quarter head of iceberg. What am I going to do with the rest of that iceberg? And the prospect of eating 3/4 of a head of iceberg as like a salad in one sitting seems like, oh my God, that's like a giant pile of lettuce. But when you put it into a soup, it cooks down. And so you get like all the good qualities of that lettuce into a much easier form to intake, you know?
It's almost something that's delicious that doesn't even require a recipe, because you can just about add anything to it once you understand the flavors you're going to get from the lettuce and whatever herbs, you know, whatever mm-hmm. ginger you put in, right? Could mm-hmm. be rice, could be chicken, could be just about any leftover protein for that matter.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. If it sounds like it's going to taste good to you, it will probably taste good. There's not like anything super complex going on. It's literally just a delicious broth with wilted lettuce in it, which you know, maybe doesn't sound great, but it tastes great.
If there's a question you'd like Kenji to answer, please email it to specialsauce@seriouseats.com. That's it for this episode of Special Sauce. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another brand new episode. In the meantime, please stay safe and healthy, Serious Eaters. Wear a mask, wash your hands often, and practice social distancing as the pandemic is entering an even more dangerous phase. And again, I urge you to do everything you can to support your local restaurants and the purveyors that supply them. The pandemic has wreaked havoc on the restaurants we all know and love. You can help save your local restaurants by donating to SaveRestaurants.com. And if you can afford it, order directly from those very same restaurants rather than using the corporate delivery apps. Or donate to worthy organizations like No Kid Hungry or Feeding America, both of which combat the food insecurity an estimated 54 million Americans are grappling with during the pandemic. If you've enjoyed listening to Tim and Carrie's remarkable story and want more Special Sauce in your life, just subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And here's the best part. It's free. So long, Serious Eaters. See you next time.
Special Sauce is a production of Dot Dash, produced by John Kalish and Ed Levine. Theme music by Charlie Morrow for Morrow Sound.